Harris, a Connecticut woman with money, lots of money. She was alone. 16 years before this century turned the corner, Sarah left New Haven, moved across the continent to San Jose, California, bought an 8-room farmhouse from a doctor named Caldwell, and it was there that Sarah would live alone until she died. What happened during those mysterious 38 years is, well, that is the rest of the story. Immediately after purchasing her farmhouse, Sarah bought 160 surrounding acres, and then she called in a team of 16 carpenters and started to work. A remodeling project was underway that would keep craftsmen working around the clock every day, including holidays, for 38 years. It became obvious to the workmen from the very beginning that this project was more than the whim of an eccentric heiress. There were plans for miles of winding corridors, some leading nowhere. One door would open on a blank wall. Another was a 50-foot drop. One set of stairs would lead into a closed ceiling. Peculiar and chilling designs like the spider web and the pentagram were everywhere. There would be rooms riddled with trap doors and an infinity of secret passageways. And one particular blue room to be entered only by the widow Sarah herself. So it was obvious from the very beginning that this was to be more than an estate of oddities for a restless recluse. This was an occult cathedral. This was to be a home for the dead for 38 years. Construction of this poltergeist palace did not end until at last Sarah died at 85. By that time, the house had spread over 6 acres of the estate. It had 160 rooms, 10,000 windows, 467 doors, 52 skylights, 47 fireplaces, 40 stairways, 13 bathrooms, and 6 kitchens. Sarah lived her life for the dead. One moonlit night, she joined them. Now, should you ever visit San Jose, and I recommend it, you can, if you want, take a tour of that house. Only by day. Even the tour guides will not venture into the mansion at night. Frightening noises, they say. Oh, yes, caretakers confirm that there still are sounds of heavy breathing and there still are footsteps in the otherwise midnight silence. Well, if it's true, they belong to the widow Sarah Winchester and the legion of phantoms that she befriended out of guilt, because, you see, her inheritance came from the Winchester rifle, the weapon that killed more Indians and more United States soldiers than any other in our nation's early history. So Sarah built her mansion so that they would have a home. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. This hour's guest is Greg Haskin, the executive director of CoLab. We're going to ask Greg about his first 9 months on the job and the big challenges ahead for Slo County in 2026. Economic development is apparently now a county priority. My question is, what took them so long and will visions collide? And then how affordable housing, budgets, and higher taxes and election year politics. So, Greg, welcome back to PWM.
Thank you, Barry. Glad to be here.
All right, folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Also text to that number as well. Before we get started, Rabbi Meir Gordon of Chabad of Paso Robles asked me to let you all know that on Sunday, December 14th, the menorah lighting is happening in the park for the first night of Hanukkah. It starts at 4:30. There's latkes and all kinds of, they do a gelt drop, which is kind of fun. And so that's all. That's a wonderful event to go to. And then in Morro Bay on the last night of Hanukkah on December 21st in Del Mar Park, there's going to be another menorah lighting for those of you down in the South County. So, or that's just easier to get to. So again, on the 14th and the 21st, menorah lightings with Chabad of Paso Robles. So Greg, you've been executive director now of CoLab for 9 months. You survived. You survived multiple appearances on PWM and all that kind of stuff. What are the two or three most surprising things you've learned since taking charge?
Well, Barry, first of all, you know, CoLab is a 501c6 organization. We are kind of a community watchdog, focused primarily on the county. And when I took the position, I had been kind of out of politics for a little while. And I was kind of surprised to learn that CoLab does play a pretty important role in our community in terms of, you know, getting the message out about what's going on, keeping an eye on the county. We have a county budget of a little over $1 billion now every year. We have a staff of about 2,800 people and a couple of dozen departments. And there's a lot that goes on at the county that impacts all of our lives. So I think people are very appreciative to have some insight about what's happening, somebody that's kind of watching things with a, I wouldn't say skeptical eye, but at least a careful eye about the way money is being spent and our lives are being impacted.
Yeah. Well, Greg, you know, you had some big shoes to fill.
Yes, absolutely.
And I miss seeing Mike Brown. And but, you know, as a longtime supporter of CoLab, even before the radio show, I mean, you've just done an excellent job just stepping in and keeping the ball rolling.
Well, thank you. I still have big shoes to fill. You know, Mike used to very proudly sort of read all the details in the staff reports and so forth and come up with things that we needed to know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you just attended today's Board of Supervisors meeting, which may still very well be going on. We don't know, but any breaking news from down in South County?
Well, there was one frustrating thing. It was almost an hour's worth of diatribe. There's a group of folks in San Luis Obispo County that are very concerned about the woebegone illegal immigrant criminals that we are dealing with all over the country. We have a fair number of them here in our county, and they're just worried to death that these poor woebegone people are being picked up out of the sheriff's department on their federal warrants, and how dare ICE do that. And so, you know, they went on and on and on. Probably, I want to say there were 20 or 25 speakers that were complaining that our sheriff isn't complying with what they call the Trust Act, which means that he has to hold an annual hearing, public hearing, to describe his interactions with ICE. And he has one scheduled for the middle of January. It's been on the schedule, and it's a public meeting, and everyone's invited. But all of these folks were accusing our sheriff of trying to be subversive or hiding things or not complying with the law. And, you know, they're just so worried about these poor people that are getting picked up, you know, for major crime violations.
Yeah, so how was it left?
Well, it was left with a report from the Sheriff's Department reaffirming that they have this meeting that everybody's calling for, and reaffirming that they do not interact with ICE on anything except when there's a federal warrant issued for a criminal that's in their jail.
All right. Well, so more to come on that. When's that hearing going to be?
That's middle of January. I don't recall the date right off the top of my head.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start. I mean, again, we have, it seems like it's the usual list of horribles here that we need to touch on. Let's start with the state and county budget shortfalls as we end 2025 and head into 26. You know, please explain for the listeners why the county budget is so heavily dependent on what happens in Sacramento.
Well, our budget, as I mentioned, is about $1 billion annually. A little over 45% of it is health and human services related expenditure. And a lot of that is passed through from the state. The state used to manage all the mental health homeless programs and so forth. And they, a couple of years ago, passed all that responsibility down to the counties and provided some funding to go with it. And so our county gets a lot of those pass-through funds from the state, and it supplements those funds for local activities as well. Our state right now is a little over $18 billion upside down. This is a report from the Legislative Analyst Office, the LAO. It's a nonpartisan, very pragmatic sort of an organization that just analyzes the figures. And they came out with this report a week ago. And not only did they say that we're $18 billion upside down, but they said that a lot of the what they call tools to manage the budget are no longer available to them because our state keeps using up all of these. They call them tools, I call them tricks, but it's a way to sort of rejigger the funding, put money in accounts that isn't there before. You know, we had a $12 billion deficit in the state in June when they were doing the budget. They figured out how to reduce that $12 billion down to a balanced budget with lots of tricks. Those tricks have used up all of that play, and now we're $18 billion. And next year, about $35 billion upside down, yeah. And it just keeps getting worse. And so our county...
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Where are they falling short as far as revenue?
They're falling short on all kinds of... kind of across the board. They keep running out businesses in the state of California that produce a lot of tax revenues. And so, you know, we get major businesses that leave the state and nobody comes to backfill. So that's a big part of the losses that they're getting. But it's more on the expenditure side. They just spend like drunken sailors.
Right.
And so our county is, our county administrative office came out with a budget forecast 2 weeks ago that put the county $11 million upside down. $11 million against $1 billion doesn't seem like a lot. But the problem is that it's creating a trend line. And all of the county agencies that receive revenues for one thing or another, most of those are less than anticipated in terms of revenue. And so they're not getting the kind of revenues they were expecting. They don't have the money they're expecting. And last budget, they made a lot of cuts that they're not going to be able to do this year because they've already made those cuts.
So, but in the meantime, all of a sudden they found $600,000 for a Morro Bay to Cayucas pathway and the Chiquetti Bridge.
Yeah.
And this money, again, they're doing the smoke and mirrors thing too, basically, right?
Absolutely. The Chiquetti Bridge thing, Supervisor Paulding is up against a tough reelection bid. And so he's working very hard. I got to give him points. He's working hard to represent his constituents. But there's an overcrossing. It's not really a bridge. It was a culvert with a dirt piled on it. But that washed out 3 years ago in the storms. And so he's been looking for money to put in a temporary bridge until the permanent bridge is built, scheduled for 2027. And so he found the money. He tried to get the board to give him extra money out of our general fund. They didn't go for that. So he found the money left over from another bridge project and dedicated it to this. It was kind of like a slush fund, really. And
how does he have the authority to do that?
Well, that's a good question. And when you sit on a majority in the board, you can get things done that sometimes are a little surprising. The pathway between Morro Bay and Cayucas, they had about a mile and a half section that they needed to cover the finances for to build this mile and a half section. And it's turning out to be a little over $1 million a mile for this pathway.
Is this a bike path?
Well, bike path, walkway, you know, pleasant pastime place. But, you know, we are not in a position right now in this county to pay for pleasantries. And I would consider that a pleasantry. And yeah. So, but nobody's calling, calling out that we're looking at a problem coming into this new budget cycle. And so today at the board meeting, there was Martha's Place and several other organizations that provide services around the county pleading for more money. And, God bless them. They all do great work. But if we don't have the money, we're going to have to get very smart about what money we do have and how we spend it.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, again, so this is going to be a recurring theme into 2026, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
So in the middle of all this, apparently the majority on the board has finally decided that they're going to focus and make economic development a priority in the budget.
Right.
When they don't have any money, of course. So, lo and behold, how did this all happen? How do you see this playing out in an otherwise NIMBY county, not in my backyard county?
Yeah. Well, economic development means they are looking to bring in more money so they can spend more money.
Right.
But economic development is very important, more than just, the county Board of Supervisors budget. It has a lot to do with our local economy, the health of our job markets, the health of our ability to function as a community, provide the services we need. So economic development means, building of housing, building of the kind of businesses that bring people to the county, bring money into our economy. And we have a couple of supervisors who love to talk all day long about how important housing is. But then when they get a project before them, they vote no. And
kind of like the Dana Reserve, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to talk about that. I want you to roll right into that because, again, where are we at with that? Is it finally on the way to going, getting it done?
It's finally on the way. Dana Reserve is at the north end of Napomo. It's a 1,200 and some home project. It took 7.5 years through the planning department and all the bureaucracies to finally get permission to get this development underway. It has some dedicated low-income and very low-income housing. It has the missing middle housing, and it's going to be a beautiful community, and it's going to provide housing options for people that right now just don't have those housing options. The housing market is so small here, and that's part of the reason that housing prices are so high is that it's a supply and demand thing. The supply is low, the demand is high. So this will open up a new chapter in housing, particularly in the South County. It'll bring in a new campus for Cuesta College, and it may turn out to be a real godsend for the growing number of people that are working down in Lompoc at the space
spaceport. Yeah,
and so it's a great thing, but Supervisor Gibson and Paulding just couldn't find it in themselves to support this, despite all the jobs it's going to bring, despite what it's going to do for the economy and what it's going to do for the county tax base. So it's a good example of the hypocrisy that we see from those gentlemen.
So as the developer said, given any idea of how long this is going to take to get going and start getting people making homes available?
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to be a couple of years, but I don't know. I couldn't really say for sure. He's got the final planning permits now, so he can start work. But there's a lot of infrastructure that has to go in on a project like that. They have to put in roads and sewers and, electrical, all kinds of stuff before they can really start building the homes.
But in essence, so this is really an economic development project that's being paid for with private money for the most part.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. All private money. Yeah, there's no subsidy to this one.
Okay, we don't expect any goofy lawsuits or anything like that at this point?
Well, there have been a couple of lawsuits just to get the project established, and those have been settled, and everything's copacetic. So I don't know where a new lawsuit would come from. We have a very litigious community that we live in.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody throws some kind of lawsuit out at it, but they've been very careful to comply with all of the rules and regulations.
Yeah. And real quickly, how does Jimmy Paulding, who's running for District 4 supervisor re-election, how does he square the circle? I mean, on the one hand, he talks out of one mouth, he wants economic development, but then he votes against this stuff.
Well, I wish you'd get him on your show and ask him that question. it's not just economic development. He's all about low-income housing. And this project provides low-income housing. It doesn't provide as much, I guess, as he'd like. I think it's 78 units plus some worker housing and so forth. But it's a significant contribution towards low-income housing in our county. And he votes against it.
All right. In the last couple of minutes we have left here, you wrote a very extensive report on what's going on with the Paso Water Basin, Groundwater Basin, JPA,
right,
an update on their latest meeting. Can you unpack the highlights of that and where this thing is going?
Well, the meeting took place last week, and they are out of money. They are looking for more money from each of the member water districts, and I know some people don't even believe they're water districts per se, but they're looking for money for those water districts. They're looking for money from the county. They've signed a new contract with the same consultants that took them through this last JPA program, and they're talking about all kinds of revenue enhancement options that they want to explore, but they're not talking, they didn't dedicate one sentence to what they're going to do to actually create sustainability in our basin.
What about the last time I talked to Greg and Murray about this, I mean, it looked like some of the water basins wanted out. Is that still happening?
Well, we keep hearing about that, but they haven't...
GSAs, excuse me.
They haven't taken that step yet. They may do that when Bruce Gibson knocks on their door asking them for more money to contribute to this giant hole that they just keep throwing money into. So anyhow, I think the biggest problem, and I mentioned this in that article that you're talking about, the problem isn't water. The problem is trust. And the people in the Paso Water Basin just don't trust this current PRAGA program. First and foremost, they're very upset that the guy that's chairing the whole thing is Bruce Gibson, the supervisor that doesn't even live over the basin. So it just gets worse and worse as time goes on.
All right. Well, yeah, that you hit your mark on that this break here.
Yeah.
When we return, we will continue to discuss economic development in Slo County and one of the most important things, the pending Coastal Commission hearing on Diablo Canyon's 20-year permit extension request. This is really important for our county. So, folks, stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. President Trump will take his economic message on the road. He's set to hold a rally this evening at Mount Pocono, Pennsylvania, swing state.
The president's going to hammer home his economic vision tonight while reminding Americans that he says what President Biden broke, he's going in the process of now fixing it. We see in some poll numbers here that he's trying to convince Americans that, their feeling of poor or only fair for their financial situation may not be the case.
Fox's Edward Lawrence there. Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker signed in a law that aims to prohibit federal immigration agents from taking action near certain locations.
Dropping your kid off at daycare, going to the doctor, or attending classes should not be a life-altering risk.
Trump administration insists they're just enforcing the nation's laws. America is listening to Fox News.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab. You can call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Greg, you know, I think probably the most important economic development story in the county right now is the extension of Diablo Canyon's permit to operate.
Absolutely.
I want you to take some time on this because, again, there are competing visions on the Board of Supervisors here.
Yes.
And thankfully, we have a 3-2 vote positive on this. But tell us what's going on and what's happening at this next Coastal Commission meeting.
Well, the Diablo Canyon, just to start, it's the largest single private employer in the county. About 2,800 jobs, high-paying jobs. It's one of the largest tax bases in the county. It pays a unitary tax, and it is a critical.
What does that mean, a unitary tax?
Well, it's a tax on a business based on its value. And right now, the value is low because Diablo Canyon only has a 5-year operating permit. So it's not as valuable as it would be if it had a 20-year operating permit.
All right.
So the tax revenues from Diablo Canyon right now are low, and that is already impacting the local school districts and some of the other beneficiaries of that tax base. But Diablo Canyon is also a critical contributor to our state grid, the electrical grid, which runs about 9 or 10% of the grid, and it's very reliable. It doesn't need the sun to shine or the wind to blow. It produces power all day long, and you can depend on it, which is a very, very important component. And so, you know, there are those anti-nuke religious fanatics that want to shut down Diablo Canyon, and they say, well, we're going to get all these wind-generating projects underway, and we're going to get all this solar and all this green energy and kumbaya. But, you know, none of them can show where we're actually going to have the power that we need to make up for that 10% of the grid. And, in fact, the grid demand keeps growing because of AI and all the various data centers and you know, the move towards electrical cars and all that sort of stuff. So Diablo Canyon's a very important thing. So the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has given it a green light to continue operating for the next 20 years, but it needs a Coastal Commission permit, and that Coastal Commission hearing took place a month ago in Sacramento, and they had a staff recommendation. The staff had worked with PG&E for many, many months to come up with a plan that would make it possible for Diablo Canyon to continue. And it involved some mitigation of land grants and so forth. Well, the Coastal Commission didn't think that was enough. And they were driven much by our local state senator, John Laird, and our local county supervisor, Bruce Gibson.
Okay, so land grants to do what?
Well, let me get into that.
All right.
Laird and Gibson went up to Sacramento and pushed the Coastal Commission to demand more land grants and more endowments to maintain those land grants. And what that means is that when PG&E acquired the property to put Diablo Canyon in it, where it is, to locate it, they bought a lot of the surrounding land as security more than anything else. And a lot of that land is pristine, it's beautiful, it's coastal, and there are these folks that want to preserve it for parks and trails. And then there's a couple of different Indian tribes that are demanding to get it back because it was somehow part of their heritage and their culture. Well, all of these demands are going to cost the ratepayers a huge amount of money. So the Coastal Commission is coming back to finish hearing the arguments on Thursday of this month or this week, and they're going to decide whether to give PG&E its 20-year operating permit, Coastal Commission permits, that it needs to continue to operate. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are saying this really comes down to extortion. It comes down to pay to play. You know, the Coastal Commission is essentially saying, if you will give away all of this land and provide funding to maintain these lands forevermore, you know, to keep the trails up and provide, you know, guides and all of this sort of expensive stuff, then we'll give you your permit. Well, that's that's just not right. But we're all going to pay for it one way or the other.
Because the cost will get passed on to the ratepayers.
Absolutely. So we're going to pay for it. If PG&E is able to continue, we're going to pay for it. And if they have to shut down, we're going to pay for it.
All right. So obviously, Bruce Gibson is in favor of this. Where's Paulding on this one?
Paulding, you know, he started out being opposed to the 20-year expansion of Diablo. And now he claims to be for it. And his excuse is, well, when the NRC went in and inspected it and found it to be safe, that was good enough for him. But, you know, Paulding is famous for wanting to be all things to all people.
Yeah. What about, one of the things you write about on a regular basis is Don Ortiz Legg has kind of become a centrist voice on the, and a swing vote. I'm sure where's she at on this?
She's very much in favor, and she's worked very hard to try to.
Or without the extra trails?
Without the extra trails. She recognizes very clearly how important it is that PG&E be given the green light to be able to continue. And that, you know, we don't hit the ratepayers in more increases.
So is the Coastal Commission actually going to make a decision here?
Well, theoretically, I mean, that's what they say they're going to do. They're kind of squishy about some things, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope so. I mean, we need to know. And there are a lot of high-end employees at Diablo that need to know, are they going to have a job in 5 years? Or should they start, boning up their resume and looking around for better jobs?
It just seems to me, I mean, just from a big picture perspective, and I mean, I know the Coastal Commission doesn't care about that, but from a big picture perspective, if California, you're talking about the budget deficits because businesses are moving out, the big thing now are all the data centers that are going up. If we don't have the power in this state to power up data centers, then I haven't heard of any. I mean, I'm sure there must be some that are being built here, but everybody's talking about building in the Permian Basin and all over the country where it's easy to build. This is going to be a big problem if we don't have the reliable power.
I think the poster child is Texas.
Right.
And Texas has just been going out of its way to attract these big data centers. The data centers bring some jobs. They bring a lot of economic investment. And they're gold mines for these states that are going out of their way to bring data centers to their local economies. And we're not doing that. We do not look at this industry as something that's developing and something that has a bright future. And we aren't looking at what we can do to accommodate them.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully the right decision will be made here, but it's going to be dicey. Yeah. All right. The next big issue that's happening is we can expect to probably see one or two ballot initiatives, whatever they're called here, on the ballot in 2026. SLOCOG, which is with the San Luis Obispo County Organization of Governments, is that right? Did I get that right?
Council of Governments.
Yeah. So all the municipalities and are represented here along with the county.
Correct.
They're looking to put a 1% tax increase for transportation and infrastructure, and the Board of Supervisors is looking at a 1% public safety that would only be a tax, right? That would only be applied to those of us who live in unincorporated San Luis Obispo County.
Right. Well, so just to be clear, the SLOCOG is a half cent.
I'm sorry.
These are sales taxes.
Okay.
SLOCOG is a half cent, and the county is looking at a 1 cent. The development of the 1 cent public safety tax by the county seems to be dragging, and I don't really know where the county stands on that. The staff has been looking into what it takes to qualify it to put it on the ballot. Initially, the county Board of Supervisors wanted to try to put it on the June ballot because the SLOCOG half-cent sales or half-cent transportation tax will be on the November ballot.
It will be.
So there's some people that are thinking now that maybe the county might have to hold off on its public safety sales tax measure. But I got to hand it to SLOCOG. I mean, I'm not a favor of tax increases, but SLOCOG has gone out of its way to protect the money that it's going to raise and dedicate it primarily to roads and make sure that it's not supplanting money that's already in place. make sure that this would be new money on top of any money that is already being dedicated to transportation. And they've got a lot of oversight to it. So it's not as bad as it could have been. And fortunately, you know, there aren't a whole lot of bike paths in this thing. And that's the one thing. I don't know why I get so irritated with these bike paths.
Yeah.
But, you know, bicyclists, you know, God bless them. They're out there enjoying or getting to work or school or whatever. But they're not paying any taxes on their bicycle.
Right.
And they're getting some pretty nice bike paths out of the deal.
Well, if they start adding a penny or a penny and a half tax onto the sales taxes, this is going to make SLO County a pretty even more expensive county.
Absolutely. And you know, the sales tax, the transportation tax was on the ballot about 10 years ago, and it failed by 400 votes. And I think since then, our county has become probably a little more open to taxes. At least it's become a little more blue. And so we may see, you know, some more openness to this kind of a thing. But I don't know, you know, CoLab has not yet come up with a position on it. But I think everybody in the county recognizes that our roads are getting worse. And part of that is due to our county board of supervisors that took transportation off its priority list several years ago and has not been dedicating resources to maintaining the roads or looking for ways to improve the safety of our roads.
I don't know where I was. I was somewhere yesterday that just the road was just unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really awful.
And we pay for that because it wears out our cars you know, it makes life unpleasant.
Yep, absolutely. So one of the things, and again, I'm skipping around here a little bit, but one of the things that you've talked about, and it was in the last week's newsletter, was the fees that the county is charging for services. And apparently they're now charging on a different basis for, like, I guess for permits what are they, real-time billing or something like that? Is that what it's called?
There's a couple of different approaches that they're taking. One of them is called full cost recovery, where they assess, you know, like if you want to go in and get a permit of some sort from the county, they've already predetermined what kind of time it takes the county to process your application for that permit, and then they create a fee accordingly. And so there is a lot of that. And then with some of the more complicated permitting, they're talking about real cost recovery, and that's something that's becoming even more controversial because you know, you stand in front of someone at the county planning department counter, and you've got an application for a permit for something that's a little unusual. And maybe that person understands how that works, and maybe they don't. And so if they have to educate themselves, or if they're not really sure and they're kind of blundering through, or maybe they're just not very efficient, you end up with a bill that's a lot more than it should be. And
right.
So there is a big push by the building trades to have that reviewed, put caps in place, and so forth. But, you know, it's frustrating for people. You know, we pay taxes to have a county government. Then the county government requires that we get permits for things. So then you go down and you want to get your permit from that government that you're paying your taxes for, and they say, well, wait a minute, that's going to cost you. Well, you're the one requiring it, and now you're charging me for it. You know, it just gets kind of frustrating after a while. So, you know, on the other hand, why should you and I pay for, you know, all the costs that goes into a permit that someone else is applying for that doesn't impact us?
Right.
So they're trying to find a balance, and they're working at it. And I just want to warn people that if they need a permit from the county after January 1, it's going to be more expensive.
Wow. And, of course, this impacts the affordable housing stuff and anything else that needs to be built.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you want to have a dog kennel, it's going to cost you more. Any kind of a permit that you get from the county, it's going to cost more.
And of course, and it doesn't solve the problem of the municipalities also having to, speaking of dogs, piddle on the project, right?
Yeah.
So.
And the worst part of it, there's the fees that have gone up the most have to do with the Williamson Act and land conservation. If you have farm property and you want to commit that property to farming, and get the tax break that the Williamson Act affords, the permit process has gone up. I can't even tell you what percent. It's gone from about $1,000 to $8,000. And the same with land conservation. If you're willing to commit some of your land to conservation, the permit for that went way, way up. And so far, we haven't seen any justification for that.
That's, I'll have to ask, we've had the Rangeland Trust on. It'd be interesting to find out what their position is on that. All right, as we close out this segment, let's try to end it on a positive note. One of the things that everybody's kind of, you know, talked about is that, you know, our new county administrator, executive officer now,
right.
and the KPMG audits.
And
so this has been a positive thing. Tell us a little, you know, inform the audience about how this has really helped and where it's going from here.
Well, a year ago, the county brought on a new chief administrative officer by the name of Matthew Pontes, and he has a very business-like approach to managing the county, and it's very refreshing because we haven't had that level of accountability and transparency, at least in a long time. And so when he came aboard, part of the condition for him coming aboard was that he sort of tunes up our budget process and makes things very accountable. And he goes through department by department, each budget, each line item in each department, and make sure that there's not a lot of redundancy, make sure that there's value to the taxpayer. And then he's contracted with KPMG to do audit each of the major departments in our county and go through and find how we can be more efficient, how we can give more value to the taxpayer. And so far, he's done a really great job. And in fact, he's been made now county executive officer, CEO, meaning that the departments have more reporting to him directly, and then he reports directly to the supervisors. So there's a more clean and defined sort of authority through the management of the county.
So I know John Pichong was pretty positive about that change. Have you seen any in the short run? It's only been about a month or so, I mean, but, you know, have you seen any positive changes in or is it too soon to tell?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell, but we will see it. The county's starting to go into its next budget process. It has to start very early, and that's where we're going to see the real difference.
So, I mean, I guess one of the big news stories, of course, is this $1 billion of fraud out of Minnesota.
Right.
And I think a lot of that, again, unfortunately, is driven by the way all of our welfare programs are done through nonprofits, which really aren't nonprofits. I mean, they're nonprofits technically, but they employ, in this county in particular, they employ a lot of people. And you know, I mean, are you thinking that the KPMG audits are helping inform the Board of Supervisors a little bit more fully to how to avoid those types of things?
Yes, I do think that's happening. The first KPMG audit was the County Department of Health, and there were a number of changes that were made after that audit, particularly billing and particularly the interactions with the state for reimbursement and so forth. Apparently, there was about $10 million on the table that we were not billing for, that the audit found. And so we've altered our billing programs. They also found that a lot of the remote services that were offered, like, say, the County Department of Health went out to Shandon and offered services and so forth. They're only getting about a 30% participation, and they need to beef up their programming so that they get, you know, 80 or 90 or even 100% utilization of those programs. So yes, we are seeing some clear efficiencies from that.
Great. All right. Well, you know, you hit the mark again, right on line here. So, okay, folks, when we return, we'll wrap up with Greg and we'll talk about the District 2 and 4 supervisor races and some of the hot button issues I'm sure we'll be hearing about and what we need to know as we move into election season yet again. So stand by. Mm-hmm.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks ending mixed as the Fed's final two-day policy meeting of the year gets underway. Central bankers are slated to decide whether to lower borrowing costs despite inflation still running above the Fed's 2% target. Markets are still expecting a near 90% chance of a 25 basis point cut tomorrow afternoon. Shares of NVIDIA fell 0.5% even after President Trump said he will let the AI darling export H200 chips to China, with the U.S. taking a 25% cut. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the chips will undergo a special security review in the U.S. before they are exported. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, American Express, and IBM. The Dow decliners, J.P. Morgan Chase, Boeing, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow falling 179 points, the Nasdaq up 31, S&P 500 down 6. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
If a Lenovo computer for your business is on your holiday list, don't shop around. Just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com. It's your last chance to get exclusive deals on the PCs you want for your business, like the ThinkPad X9 14 Aura Edition and Yoga 7i 2-in-1. So avoid all that shopping chaos and price comparing, and just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com, where PCs are up to 35% off. That's Lenovo.com. Lenovo.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, Lindsay from K. John's Jewelry Company. For as long as we've been here, there's been one principle guiding us: treat people with honesty and respect. That's why we never discount. We've always believed that pricing jewelry fairly, every single day, is the right thing to do. No inflated margins, no pretending something is a deal, just integrity. But now we're entering one of the biggest moments in our history, and we want to share it with you. After decades of showcasing designers we admire, it's time for K. John's to create something deeply personal, our own jewelry designs, crafted with the love and experience this community has given us. To make room for this new chapter, we're liquidating our entire current inventory. December 2nd through Christmas Eve, experience more than just a sale. It's a thank you from our family to yours. A thank you for every visit, every story shared, every moment you've trusted us to be a part of. And this is your chance to take home something truly special at prices we'll never offer again. We're so grateful for the decades of support you've given us, and we can't wait to show you what comes next. K. John's Jewelry Company, where every piece begins with gratitude.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show will feature Rob Covarrubias, who is the Acting Executive Director of the Paso Robles Templeton Chamber of Commerce. There has been some reorg over there, and Rob's doing a great job. He's a good friend, known him for years, and he's going to update us on that aspect of things. And then next week will be my last show of 2025. I'm going to take a couple weeks off, but I'm going to have my buddies from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, year in review and 2026 predictions. We're going to talk about politics, AI, crypto, and all kinds of other stuff from a generational perspective. Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Jake Frederick. Real quickly, we had a text question from somebody, and Greg will answer this question. Apparently, they got their bill from their PG&E bill, which is really a 3CE bill,
right?
And they got an extra tax. What's that all about, Greg?
Well, yeah, I think you could call it a tax, but it's 3CE is an energy provider that came in and took over a region. They're now in seven counties. And 3CE's promise is that they're going to source power from clean energy, and that they're going to provide cheaper, cleaner energy for their customers. So far, we haven't seen much of either part of that promise. But you had the option to opt out. They didn't make it very clear, and so not a lot of people opted out. I think you could still opt out, but I think it involves now a fee. And if you have solar and you're a 3CE customer, it gets very complicated because the true up can be very expensive. So it's a very frustrating thing, but it's one of those things that government sort of lets other branches of government slide in and get bigger and more impactful in our lives. So I wish I could give you more information about it, but 3CE in my book is a little sketchy.
Yeah, and I do have to say, one of the values of listening to KPRL is that this is through the 3CE opt-out was covered extensively, not only in the morning exchange with Kevin, but I talked about it a bunch, and you know, Mike Brown talked about it. You know, so I mean, it's something that, you know, opting out was, it may be too late now at this point from a cost perspective. I don't know, but
I think you can still call and inquire about opting out, and there may be options still available to you.
All right. Before we talk about elections, Greg, real quickly, CoLab's annual dinner, which in my mind is one of the best events of the year, is set for March 26th at the Madonna Inn. Can you give us a bit of a preview of who might be coming to speak and what kind of festivities?
I'm a little leery of giving you any kind of indication of who we might have as the guest. I promise you it'll be a good guest. It's a great event. We usually have between 500 and 600 people at a dinner at Madonna Inn. We have everybody who's anybody in politics. We have a lot of good guests that come and give us some insights. So you'll get more information on that hopefully in the coming weeks. But put it on your calendar and listen for the details, and hopefully you can join.
And you can follow all that on www.colabslow.org.
Correct.
Right? It'll
correct.
All be there. All right.
And I should just clarify for people that aren't real familiar, CoLab is the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business, and we are a 501c6 organization, county watchdog.
Been around for a long time now.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, real quickly, election season is upon us. Aside from everything else we've talked about, we've got a very big supervisor's race in District 4 coming up.
Right.
I'd like you to comment on why this is so important to those of us up in the North County, and particularly in light of the, the Prop 50 vote and the piss-poor turnout of GOP voters. I think I can say that on air.
Well, you just did.
Oh, okay.
So the District 4 is South County, and it's Napomo and, the regions around the bottom end of the county. The current incumbent is Jimmy Paulding. This is his first term. He is a Democrat, liberal Democrat. It is a district that favors Republican registration. It's a nonpartisan race, but, it's whether you're conservative or moderate or liberal. Jimmy Paulding is the latter. He's liberal. And he's been sort of the protege of Bruce Gibson, who's very liberal. And so Paulding has been part of the majority that's kind of given us a lot of strange votes, like the priorities we talked about in the last segment. We have high priority for homeless, low priority for transportation and those kinds of things. The next election, which is June of 2026, there'll be two people, at least two that we know of now, on the ballot. There'll be Jimmy Paulding running for re-election, and then there's a South County businessman by the name of Adam Verdin who's running to unseat Paulding. Verdin is, I wouldn't call him an arch-conservative, but he's a very smart, business-minded a small businessman. His family has owned Old Juan's Cantina for 40 years. He's also a commercial pilot, and he's an attorney. Very sharp guy, very involved with the community, and on a lot of boards and organizations. So yeah, he's a good guy.
This is a really important race for the North County, because we've got to get the majority back on the Board of Supervisors to try to get more real economic development in this county,
right,
and move things moving in the right direction. Greg, thank you so much for being on the show today, and have a great holiday season, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Look forward to it.
All right, folks, I'll talk to you next week. Look forward to it. Take care.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.